From Toronto, Canada, home of igloos, polar bears, and flying hockey pucks, this is Inside Movies and TV.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Well, hello there, everyone. Welcome to Inside Movies and TV. This is show number 67. Thank you very much for joining us once again. This is the podcast where we talk about all the inside details of your favorite movies and TV shows, or probably more accurately, our favorite movies and TV shows. My name is Jamie Hosking, and with me, as always, is my co-host and pretty much the show's producer. He puts together the notes, he runs the blog, he puts up with all your annoying comments. Mr. Aaron Shaw, how are you, Aaron?
I don't put up with annoying comments.
I'm joking. I want people to put up annoying comments.
I would put up with annoying comments if we got comments.
That's a dare to all those seven listeners out there. And, of course, joining us once again, and we're happy to have you here, Dennis, is Mr. Dennis Cucciarelli. How's it going?
Fine, Jamie. Welcome back from the West Coast.
Yes, thank you very much. I did take a quick trip. It's my first week-long vacation I've taken in 3 years. To BC and Washington State. And actually, I have something movie related. I visited the what they call the Experience Music Project. It's a big museum featuring a history of guitars, rock and roll, but more importantly, I guess, how the kind of northwestern U.S. and the talent from that area fit so prominently into rock music culture and country music culture. And we're not just talking grunge. We're not talking Nirvana and Pearl Jam. We're talking about, Louie Louie and all that nonsense. For example, I didn't know, was it The Kingsman? Dennis, you might know about this. Louie Louie, was it Louie Louie? Was recorded twice at the same time by two different bands in the same town. Oh. In Portland, Oregon. I believe that's how it went. And there was literally a battle of who had the best version of Louie Louie. It was very, very cool.
I didn't know that, but can you sing along to it? Do you understand the lyrics?
No singing.
Never understood the lyrics.
No. Yeah, well, that's just it. At the time, of course, they thought they were very racy. But anyway, they had a great, multi-story, huge music exhibit. Super cheap to get in, only $14. I mean, I paid twice that to get into a flower garden. Don't ask. And but the other half of the building, which I had no idea about, was the Science Fiction Museum and Hall of Fame, which was amazing. And many of the exhibits were donated by the family of Paul Allen, who is the co-founder and I believe he's currently CEO, if not COO, of Microsoft. And the guy is obviously, the biggest nerd on the planet, certainly bigger than I am. He has costumes and props from Blade Runner, from the old Battlestar Galactica show, the old Buck Rogers show, lots of old sci-fi. He's got props from Lost in Space, from... He's got an original E.T., like the costume E.T. He's got the coolest thing that I saw that was there was, and I don't know whether this is part of his collection or part of the museum, the original model, and it occurred to me it was the only fully completed model of the Death Star from Star Wars, from A New Hope from 1977. It's a good size. It's about 3 feet in diameter, and they only finished the front. It's completely finished, and you can press a button, and it lights up, and it plays the Imperial March, the da 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 da. And when you're in that room, the Death Star's kind of in the center with exhibits all around it, and people are pressing it all day long. Like, all you hear when you're in that room, da 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 da. And you can go around to the back. It's in a glass case, and you can go around to the back, and you can see there's a light just backlighting the inside of the Death Star. And what they did, it's just a globe that they painted gray, and the type of paint that the light won't shine through. And they just took a knife and they scraped away little windows, one by one, by hand, throughout the entire surface of the Death Star to make it look like there was windows and lights and things going on. It was very, very cool. So if you're in the Seattle area, I highly recommend you take $14 and go straight to Seattle Center and check out the Experience Music Project, the Science Fiction Museum and Hall of Fame. You'll spend hours and hours and have a great deal of fun.
The shirt fits nicely, by the way.
Ah, yes, I brought Aaron a souvenir T-shirt from the EMP, not the Electromagnetic Pulse, the Experience Music Project. Good time, though. We had great weather, saw some friends, saw some family. It was fantastic. We've got lots of really great stories, including the big one that we'll talk about at the end of the show, which is the purchase of Marvel Comics, Marvel Studios, Marvel Entertainment by the Disney Corporation. If you haven't heard about that, well, where have you been? But we'll talk in some detail about that. But first, we have a story about AMC's Mad Men.
AMC has given an early renewal to Mad Men. The fourth season pickup comes on the heels of the show's third season premiere, which drew a record 4.5 million viewers on August 16th, as well as critical praise. The series recently received 16 Emmy nominations, which is the most for any drama series, including the categories such as Outstanding Drama, Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama for John Hamm, Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama for John Slattery, and Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama for Elizabeth Moss. The show's creator, Matthew Weiner, who garnered four of the five drama series writing nominations, is already on board for the fourth season as part of his wide-ranging deal with AMC and the Mad Men show producer Lionsgate, which he inked earlier this year.
Well, this is no surprise, I don't think, right? Mad Men is definitely AMC's highest-rated show. I imagine the cost of producing it goes up every year as the talent gets more money. But why wouldn't they renew it? I mean, it's one thing. The biggest thing that's drawing people to AMC to watch that network, that and Breaking Bad, I guess, would be the other one. Do you watch AMC? Or do you watch Mad Men, Aaron?
I tried.
You tried. I know. I did, too. People rave about it.
It's not that it's a bad show.
No.
It's because I didn't have any complaints about the acting. It just didn't. I guess it caters to, I don't know, I don't have that gene in me that made me want to keep watching.
And the funny thing about John Hamm, who apparently I hear is a fantastic guy. In fact, I've heard it physically with my own ears. All his friends are like all in comedy. Like he's friends with Doug.
A comedian.
A bunch of comedians. Anyway, yeah, he's good friends with all, like Jimmy Pardo, those guys. Doug, the guy who does the I Love Movies, and his name's right in the tip of my tongue. I can't remember. Anyway, but, he's doing a dramatic show, but I believe much of his background is in comedy. He's hosted Saturday Night Live, and he was very funny at it. Anyway, yeah, popular show. People seem to love it. And, it's a period piece, which I think is pretty unique, too.
The time of the 60s when, you want to be like, I prefer the 40s to the 60s.
Yeah, and there's lots of intrigue in the background. There's lots of
guys
intrigue.
Were guys.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it was when times they were a-changing. But there's lots of intrigue with the John Hamm character and everything else. Moving on to a show that my brother absolutely loves, and he continues to try to get me to watch it, and I still will watch. I will watch it because I've got his DVDs. And that's Rescue Me, very popular show for FX. Starring Dennis Leary, produced by Dennis Leary. Really just an incredibly relevant show, especially after the 9/11 attacks in New York City. But it's set to end. It's run in 2011. It'll be 10 years after the September 11th terrorist attacks when it wraps up. It was basically the creative impetus for the series. Sony Television is going to continue it for 19 more episodes. It's undetermined how the network will release the final shows. Though most likely in two different seasons of 10 and 9 episodes each. They hardly seem like seasons.
Yeah.
Production of the final episodes is slated to begin this month. Dennis Leary, of course, stars as the hard-drinking, conflicted fireman who begins dating the wife of his cousin who died in the World Trade Center attack. He's been twice Emmy-nominated for his performance and once for co-writing with Peter Tolan. The show averages 1.4 million total viewers. Those numbers go up significantly, however, when DVR and video on demand usage is included. And I can't imagine how much the DVD sales for that show probably really boost up that show as well. Dennis, have you ever watched Rescue Me? Is that a show that's on your radar at all?
No, I haven't. And to tell you the truth, I've never really taken to Dennis Leary as a comic or as a performer. I don't know what it is about him. Maybe the acerbic, chip on your shoulder style, but and also I kind of never took to stories based or inspired by 9/11 too, for just the reason I remember watching 9/11 happen, how horrific it was, and I just I never saw the was it Oliver, what's his name,
Platoon? Oliver Stone.
Thank you, Oliver Stone. Movie based on it, and
I did see that movie, and it wasn't bad.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't comfortable to watch, obviously, so quickly after the 9/11 attacks. But what he did a really good job on that, making it universal meaning.
But what
everyone.
My point is, unless you have something revealing, why do it? Why make a movie about such a horrific incident that we all viewed? Unless you have some kind of wisdom to impart or some deep buried information, you know, that didn't come out.
I'll compare it to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
I'd rather a movie that's based on actual firefighters who survived the wreckage of 9/11 than a love story with Pearl Harbor as the backdrop.
That's a good point. But, you know, with Pearl Harbor, I agree with you. That was a failed opportunity, but that was done so many years after the event. If they could have done it as more of a tribute and so that the new generation finds out, you know, what these men actually did.
Yeah.
But, you know, our generation having seen, it's like making a film about the Challenger disaster. Why? You know, what's the insight to be gained from that? I wouldn't go as far as to call it exploitation, but in a way it's kind of it. It's, you know, like a movie about the plane that went down in, was it Pennsylvania? You know, that was headed for the White House. Yeah, that kind. I doubt the families would watch it.
Now, were you referring to United 93?
Yeah.
Yeah, now that movie was quite critically acclaimed, wasn't it? I mean, I thought the movie did quite well.
Well, I guess I'm in the minority.
Well,
welcome to the club.
I think with Rescue Me, there's actually, believe it or not, a little bit of background with Rescue Me. He has always had kind of this kinship with firefighters, especially in, well, he's from Boston, but I guess the New York area, because he's kind of a transplanted New Yorker. But I think perhaps, and, you know, please, listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, it just happened to be kind of circumstance when he was launching the show that 9/11 happened. He did a show on ABC that was way before its time called The Job, which was the exact same show, except they played cops instead of firefighters. And because it was on network television, it got censored left, right, and center. It was a hilarious show. It got canceled after not even, I think, a complete season. And they just couldn't do the things that they wanted to do. So that's why they kind of went with FX, so they can go with cable. It doesn't have to be censored, that sort of thing. And I think as opposed to, you know, something that has the gravitas of, say, Oliver Stone's World Trade Center, Rescue Me's more of a dramedy. There's definitely comedy elements in it. And I don't think you have to be a fan of his stand-up, because his stand-up certainly, you know, acerbic and jarring. I've been a fan of his stand-up ever since I saw him on Evening at the Improv. I thought he was absolutely hilarious. But, yeah, he's not for everybody. Same with Sam Kinison. These guys are not for everybody.
And yet I enjoy Sam Kinison.
But I think the show has had a remarkable run. You know, every season, from what I understand, has been pretty critically acclaimed. It, because it's on FX and because it's Dennis Leary and there aren't a lot of huge names, I think it kind of gets steamrolled a little bit when it comes to awards time by other shows that maybe are on bigger networks. But I'm glad it had a successful run, and I'm glad it portrayed firefighters in a really, what I probably is a realistic light.
And I'm glad that it's doing what every, I don't know for certain if this is a serialized show, but I'm glad it's deciding when it's going to
end. Yeah, it is. And I believe, yeah, it is.
That's
definitely a serialized show.
That serialized television needs to do.
Well, if you have a couple of bucks burning holes in your pocket, you'll be happy to know that tickets for James Cameron's Avatar, that is the opening midnight screening, are on sale. That's almost 4 months in advance of its December 18th opening. And it's interesting that Cameron's Avatar is opening on December 18th because that's actually the same date that Titanic opened several years ago. Well, I guess about more than a decade ago, eh, guys? Hand me down my walking cane. So it's the much-hyped sci-fi action movie. The tickets are already on sale at AMC theaters. Now, it's touted as a potential watershed release, and that what means it displays the creative possibilities of both 3D cinema and motion capture production techniques. In August, Fox Studios staged public screenings of a special 16-minute trailer at 100 IMAX theaters. Now, AMC has decided to sell tickets to the movie's opening day midnight performances. I guess they want that money to be in their bank account accruing interest instead of in yours. So MovieTickets.com and Fandango began ringing up sales for Avatar performances at more than 75 AMC locations, most of them IMAX 3D venues. So if you're going to see this movie, you better see it in 3D.
Yeah.
They say that sales of the midnight tickets are healthy. Well, what else are they going to say, right? So I'm sorry, Avatar is already a bomb. We've sold three tickets, you know. So it was unclear if any other exhibitors will follow AMC's lead in offering early advance ticketing for the film. Of course, here that would be Cineplex and Empire Theaters. No one can offer tickets for any screenings beyond the first midnight performances. Well, duh, because nobody knows what the final running time will be. Cameron, of course, is still editing the film. Its length is likely to be between 2.5 and 3 hours. And now, if that's the same prediction as he did for his budget, original budget on Titanic, look out.
Well, I just find that that's pretty pretty interesting. This is obviously going to be one of the big grocers of the holiday season. It's got a good week ahead of time before Sherlock Holmes comes out, which I think more people are going to see because that comes out on Christmas Day, and just a movie that's not even finished yet and based on only a 16-minute trailer. And they're like, well, we better start selling tickets for this thing. That says a lot about the anticipation and the expectation of this movie. It is, of course, Cameron's first movie since Titanic. He's done a lot of production work, and he's done a lot of documentary stuff on Titanic. Like, I'm sure he's sick of it. He's sick.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first non-documentary movie he's made since Titanic. He did Ghost of the Abyss after that, but again, Titanic-related. It's amazing that he's taken this long to make a film. Apparently, the urban legend is that he brought this idea to Digital Domain, which is the effects company that spun out of his company, Lightstorm Entertainment, while they were making the Terminator movies and Titanic and all those other films he's made. And they said, we're nowhere near the technology that you need to make this film. So he's kind of backburned it for a while. There is another trailer they didn't mention in the story that there is a standard, you know, 2.5 minute trailer that is out right now.
It reminds me of 10,000 BC.
It's rather video game-ish. It kind of looks like a cross between Mass Effect and Fable. Basically, the premise of the movie is that a man confined to a wheelchair, played by Sam Worthington, gets his consciousness downloaded into an avatar, which would be a representation of him. It's a 10-foot-tall blue alien, and then he goes to another planet, and wackiness ensues, I guess. Wow. Sigourney Weaver's also in it.
Like SimWorlds.
And it's fully CGI once they get to this planet. It's ironic that, of course, now the big selling point are two things, IMAX and or 3D. And this is apparently, I guess, IMAX and 3D. I don't think that it's a full – I mean, they didn't shoot it with IMAX cameras, but they want to show it on IMAX screens. Up until this point, there has never been a full-length feature movie that's been shot in IMAX. It's just too damn expensive. But I think John Favreau has expressed some interest in doing an IMAX film, and so has Christopher Nolan, actually. He actually shot IMAX scenes for The Dark Knight, and you can certainly tell the difference.
On the Christopher Nolan front, the trailer for Inception's out now.
I saw that. And
looks like The Matrix.
Still don't know what it's about.
I know. Well, nobody does. He's keeping it low-key.
One of the things about the whole IMAX and 3D thing is not too long ago, you know, IMAX was borderline bankrupt. Obviously, the money is made in Hollywood films, and of course, they had documentaries and that sort of thing, and all their different nature shows, and you know, they did okay, but they were literally knocking on Hollywood's door saying, "Please show your movies on our screens, please, please." Now it's Hollywood kind of doing the other way around. They're coming to IMAX, and they don't have enough screen space. You know, a movie like Harry Potter had to be delayed, 3 weeks, was it, before it could finally get on?
Because of Transformers.
So it's been a big deal to try and get IMAX screens. IMAX is really fast-tracked getting more screens built, more theaters built, but that, unfortunately, at the expense of size. These new IMAX theaters, unlike the originals, are not nearly the size.
You heard about this.
Yeah.
I was going to use that as a story for the show, but I couldn't actually find it online. It was in McLean's.
Yeah, it's in McLean's. They're not nearly the size as the original theater, so it's kind of a I don't know if anybody's ever used to IMAX, but if you've experienced an original IMAX film before, you know that it's massive. And the reason why it's so cool is because it is massive. So to make
the projector can shine open space, but it's gone digital now. So
exactly, yeah. I mean, the prints were hugely
every
expensive.
Theater
yeah.
has.
But to have a smaller theater, I don't know if that discounts or downplays the whole idea of having it in IMAX in the first place. End of rant.
You had something you wanted to say, yes, Dennis?
Yeah.
You're like, bring it over here. I got something.
What's interesting about all of this is that they're pegging all their risk on special effects. Nobody's talked about the story or the characters or anything in any development. So, you know, you can only look at pretty pictures and be awed and astonished and shocked and awed for so long before, the story has to deliver. And, having a 16-minute trailer is one way of doing it. But, you know, for a boy from Niagara Falls, you know, and Chippewa, that is, you know, a little hamlet of Niagara Falls, he's done quite well in Hollywood. And, of course, the worldwide revenues that Titanic earned for him has really given him carte blanche with the studios. And it's really interesting when you think of Titanic that there's 12-year-old children out there who were born the year Titanic came out, and they're probably going to want to see a James Cameron film.
And Titanic still is the number one grossing movie worldwide. But I just wanted to get on the thing about you're talking about pictures and graphics. I just got five words for you. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. That movie has already grossed $400 million. It is going to be the highest grossing movie of the year. Nothing's even Harry Potter can't catch up to. It's not even at $300 million.
It's one of the worst movies of the year.
It is. But
it's one of the best and one of the worst.
That's what, you know, I guess some people like, you know, again, putting me in the minority is, you know, they're not as hell-bent on story as they are badass visual effects. Especially when it comes to an IMAX. In IMAX, I can understand that because it just... Dark Knight in IMAX was crazy good, and I almost had a seizure at one scene. the Blu-ray, the night vision scene where he's fighting.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, no. What you're saying is absolutely right, and there is a line. There's a bottom, and Transformers dug underneath the bottom, dug a little deeper, and it got even worse. I mean, Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen is one of the best movies of the year and one of the worst movies of the year. It's one of the worst movies of the year in the traditional sense that a movie's bad. Horrible script, god-awful acting, horrible stereotypes, it's racist, it's sexist, it's misogynistic, it's got horrible pace, it's got 90 minutes in the middle that you can cut right out. But technically, nothing can beat it. Technically, it's phenomenal to look at. If you were to take somebody from 20 years ago and show them Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, they would go, how the hell did you get these cars to turn into robots?
This is true.
They wouldn't even fathom that it was a computer that did this.
10 years ago, yeah. Even.
One last note on Avatar. Obviously, yes, they have been relying on, you know, effects-heavy scenes in these different previews they're showing. And that's because I think they may have learned a lesson. There's been virtually zero known about this movie until Comic-Con, which was just recently. This movie's coming out in December. We hear about movies that are coming out next summer already.
Yes.
Iron Man 2, for example. We're seeing trailers and teasers and that sort of thing for movies that are coming out next spring, next summer, next fall, next Christmas. Like, Christmas 2010.
Trailers of movies that keep getting pushed off.
Exactly.
Like, what's the deal with Shutter Island in February? It works in October.
But what I'm saying is I think they may have learned their lesson where they're keeping details about this big movie under wraps, and hopefully it doesn't backfire. But you know, a lot of movies are prone to over-publicizing. You know, you hear way too much, too soon, way too often.
That's what killed Iron Man for me.
Until the time you get to the movie, you're done. You know, it's only a couple months away before Avatar comes out. I think there's virtually nothing known about the story. What I told you about that plot line is pretty much it. That's all we know. We know the cast.
Mm-hmm. It's 3 months till Christmas.
But, you're right. 3 months away. And I think they're really trying to keep a real air of secrecy about this film. Let's move on. We've talked enough. We've given James Cameron enough free publicity for our 7 listeners. Aaron, you've got a story here about possibly one of my least favorite film franchises, Bad Boys, getting a third movie.
Yay! Come on, round of applause. No? I loved the Bad Boys movies.
I loved the first one. The second one was...
The second one was a sequel.
The second one was brutal.
I'll get into a rant about it. It's kind of a good little segue here because we were talking about hearing too much too soon, too early about a movie. And this is very, very... The earliest you can hear of anything is Bad Boys 3 is in early pre-production as Columbia Pictures has hired Peter Craig, newcomer, to write a screenplay for a possible third Bad Boys movie. The hope of this movie is to have a script that would reunite director Michael Bay, Transformers, with producer Jerry Bruckheimer, and, of course, the stars Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. At this point, with the project in the early stages, no deal is in place as of yet. If you are not familiar with the Bad Boys franchise, the film stars Smith and Lawrence as Miami police detectives who blow up everything in sight while solving a narcotics investigation. Bad Boys was released in 1995 and grossed a modest $66 million in the North American box office, but did help cement or raise the status of Michael Bay and Will Smith as action stars.
Yeah, Will Smith really didn't do action movies until Bad Boys. That was one of his first ones, if not his very first one.
Yeah, he was. I think the only movie he had out before Bad Boys was Six Degrees of Separation.
Yeah, see, so there you go.
And Bad Boys 2, which was a sequel, definitely, because it had all the stuff, the problems that a sequel had, like a budget. This was released in 2003, but grossed $138 million in North American box office. But at that point, Will Smith and Michael Bay had already been thrown through the roof, especially Smith with Independence Day. All parties have expressed a willingness to return if a story can be hammered out, but the potential hurdle is that how much it would cost to get said parties on board. As for who Peter Craig is, well, he's the son of Sally Field and currently has three films in which he has written are currently in pre-production, one of which is a big screen adaptation of Cowboy Bebop, which is going to star Keanu Reeves.
Oh, we'll just reserve an Academy Award for those guys right there. All right, Bad Boys 3, a great financial, money-making executive decision on the part of Columbia.
If it doesn't, and nothing is even done. He hasn't even probably typed the first word of a draft. The problem that I still like Bad Boys 2, but Bad Boys was an action movie, right? It was a traditional action movie. This is where I was actually thinking today when I had my laptop at work and I was watching some Dark Knight. It was Bad Boys 2... It showed that they gave it a budget. It was overdone.
Oh, yeah.
It was over the top, crazy. The story was, somewhat weak. But the chemistry between Smith and Lawrence was still there. It was still relevant from the first movie. And I kind of liked it. So if they're doing a third one, they need to water it down just a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it would have to be a little more. You know where I think they could go? I'm not saying the exact angle, but perhaps what they did with maybe... I'm gonna regret saying
Speed
this.
Speed 2 Cruise Control?
No. Live Free or Die Hard. It was a bit different than the other Die Hard movies. But it was, the same
one.
As well.
Yes,
it was the fourth one with Justin Long and Timothy Olyphant.
Right.
So it was, it wasn't just Die Hard 4. It was Live Free
Keep
or
Dying
Die
Hard.
But it was a bit different. It had a different kind of kinetic energy to it. And it was successful on its own merits, I think.
It was better than people would have expected because it had been 14 years.
Yeah, and it was certainly smarter than Die Hard 2. So it has potential. I don't think that Will Smith would get on board unless it was a really good script. It had a director that he had some faith in, and they pulled up a dump truck full of money in front of his
house. Well, that, or you can just say, dude, you did Hancock, 7 Pounds, and there was another one. Pursuit of Happiness. He got an Oscar nomination for that,
I think he thought
he
7 Pounds.
Found his.
Well, I think he thought 7 Pounds would be another Pursuit of Happiness. Maybe
since really. Well, I guess you could say I Am Legend. He hasn't had.
I Am Legend. Yeah, I dug.
He hasn't had a block, but that wasn't a summer movie. That was a
That's
Thanksgiving
true.
Movie. Like he hasn't had a summer blockbuster since I Robot.
He used to own the July Long Weekend too.
Yeah, Independence Day
every
and
year.
Black.
Every year he put out a movie, yeah. All right, Aaron, you've got a great story about what YouTube's plans are to fight along the lines of Netflix and Cinema Now and MovieLink and all these other websites.
so on and so forth. That's right. YouTube wants to offer rentals of full-length films at roughly the same time studios release them on DVD. Of course, these would be you can pay to stream them. It wouldn't be much of a stretch for studios to allow YouTube to stream new release titles, provided that the site would pay for the titles. Cable companies generally offer movies for $3.99 a viewing, with studios getting a cut of PBV proceeds under their revenue-sharing agreements with Comcast, Time Warner Cable, and others. Studios have already allowed, as we were saying, Netflix and websites such as Cinema Now and Movie Length offer feature films. But YouTube, which has always been a free advertising-supported site, has only ever been able to offer clips of Hollywood-produced content and not full-length features. There appears little chance that YouTube will secure an advertising-supported scheme to stream full-length movies. This is a story we talked about a few months back. These talks were held several months ago, but after it was reported, they never got much traction. A fee-based arrangement and studio revenue-sharing deals with YouTube looks more likely. Issues of timing aside, talks between YouTube and a handful of studios about some sort of agreement on movie streaming have gotten decent traction. Among them, Sony, Warner's, and Lionsgate are among the studios that are discussing potential agreements with YouTube, which is going to be modeled after their PBV packs. These talks started 2 months ago, but the parties have failed to agree on financial terms and other details. None of the parties would confirm the talks for the record when the word of the discussion circulated yesterday, actually. But the spokesman for YouTube and Lionsgate acknowledged that an interest is present.
Well, this isn't entirely unexpected. YouTube, still, you know, one of the most popular websites out there, and certainly the most popular streaming website, at least in America, is kind of getting its butt handed to it by websites like Hulu, where they're showing full-length TV shows. Hulu still can't show movies, of course, but Netflix in the U.S. is incredibly popular and growing every day. And, you know, they started off with the DVD rentals that you give the DVDs in the mail. It's a subscription service, and we have that here in Canada called zip.ca, and they do it through Rogers Video as well. But what they have now is, in conjunction with an electronics manufacturer, they have set-top boxes that you can stream movie rentals and your movie queue right on demand, so you don't even have to wait for them to come in the mail.
This wouldn't be anything more different than renting a movie through iTunes.
Exactly
iTunes,
right. Yeah. Only with this,
you can buy a movie through iTunes. You can rent a movie through iTunes, and it'll keep you in your library for a set amount of days. I guess instead of automatically getting downloaded to your computer for streaming, this would be,
I guess you
charge your credit card.
Yeah, and you get permission to watch it for X number of days.
Yeah.
I think the advantage of watching it on YouTube are
before they track your IP and say, you can't watch this anymore, exactly. You pay again. I mean, it's not hard to do.
No. The advantage with YouTube is that there's no subscription needed like you'd need for Netflix. There's no external hardware needed unless you wanted to send the streaming video to your television as opposed to watching it on your computer. But that's, people have media setups like that all the time.
Another advantage of YouTube is it doesn't geo-block you.
Oh, yes, like Hulu does.
I'm hoping if this gets successful, some of those movies out there in the UK and abroad that I want to see, but I don't know if it's ever going to come to North America that I'd be able to watch it. Or you never know, they might, terms of agreement might be saying, you might start getting geo-blocked,
right?
Based on your IP address. But there's a number of trailers online on YouTube that I've seen from movies across the UK that I'd like to see.
And you know what? If anybody's going to be able to do this, it'll be YouTube. They've got the resources of Google behind them, the company that will destroy the world. So I believe Google is
company that's killed. GMCs.
Google is also known as Cyberdyne Systems, Skynet. They're going to start building robots, and we're all going to die. All right. Until then, we can enjoy stories like this one, which is our big story this week, and I'm sure everyone has heard it. Disney purchasing Marvel Entertainment for $4 billion with a B dollars. The announcement of the deal was last Monday, and it marked the second time President and CEO Robert Iger worked. Wowed the industry with a surprise purchase. The first time came 3 years ago when, shortly after replacing Michael Eisner, he gobbled up Pixar for $7.4 billion. Among the key reasons for the deal is Disney's desire to attract males in the same number and degree it has managed to do with young females, with such characters as princesses, fairies, and Hannah Montana. The TV channel Disney XD was recently created with that young male market in mind. At least in the beginning, Disney must share its newfound superhero wealth. Marvel has pre-existing licensing deals that allow Sony to make Spider-Man movie sequels and Fox to make X-Men movies. And Paramount is set to distribute the next five films from Marvel Studio, including the Iron Man franchise. Iger said Monday that those arrangements will be honored. Eventually, Iger said Disney will probably become the sole distributor of Marvel movies, some of which likely will be in, wait for it, 3D. Marvel's own projects include Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, the movies based on Thor, Captain America, and the Avengers. Paramount has worldwide distribution rights to those films. Iger and Disney CFO Tom Staggs didn't disclose any changes that he might have in store concerning Marvel's pipeline. One thing they haven't mentioned, of course, is that Sony's got plans underway for a Spider-Man 4. We've already talked about that earlier.
Yes. And one thing I heard was that they might be pushing back Thor again.
Really? They've got it cast?
They've got it cast. See, they're going to... This is one thing I heard. I couldn't find any reports on it. So it could have just been, you know, rumor and speculation. It was Thor either is going to get pushed back or not happen. And they may even skip Marvel's plan to do solo movies of the Avengers characters and just fast-track an Avengers movie, which would suck.
Yeah, that would
Marvel
suck.
Marvel has a good plan in mind.
Yeah. And Marvel Studios, Marvel Films, has been, you know, pretty well-received. For the longest time, Marvel couldn't get a comic book movie off the ground. DC really enjoyed success with Superman and Batman movies, a Wonder Woman TV show, a Hulk TV show. Oh, sorry, not Hulk. Sorry, scrap that. Wonder Woman TV show and, you know, various animated properties and that sort of thing. And Marvel just couldn't get their act together. And they finally did, believe it or not, starting with Blade. And it went from there with different movies like Hellboy and then finally Spider-Man. And well, X-Men actually came first and then Spider-Man. But obviously this brings up a lot of questions. What's this deal mean for Marvel movies? In unveiling the acquisition, Disney president and CEO Robert Iger didn't immediately focus on Marvel's film properties, a number of which were currently tied up, of course, with those different studios. Instead, much of the introductory talk centered on how Marvel's superheroes could drive boys to Disney's new XD channel and produce merchandising and theme park bonanzas. A lot of questions on the motion picture side remain unanswered, and probably because they don't have the answers.
Exactly.
The acquisition news has execs inside Disney and producers on the lot salivating over the titles and characters they'd like to get their hands on to develop. John Lasseter, the chief creative officer at Pixar and Disney Animation, was even part of the acquisition talks, suggesting that he may take a significant role in assimilating Marvel into Disney. And that's, I think, really good news. When Lasseter took over Disney Animation, the first thing he did is say, no more direct-to-video sequels, no more Lady and the Tramp 4 and Bambi 5 and all that other nonsense that Aaron and I saw plenty of when we were working in the video industry. It was embarrassing.
Why?
It was embarrassing.
Although they found some kind of success with High School Musical, the first two were directed to DVD. You figure that one out.
Yeah, exactly. Marvel's developing scripts for several projects, such as Ant-Man with Edgar Wright and Runaways, that could find an intermediate home at Disney. A lot of people don't realize that Marvel Studios is pretty much an independent film producer. They teamed up with studios for funding for, what am I trying to think of? The one movie that they started off and had to team up with was Ghost Rider. You have to forget about Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and X-Men because they were just in association with Marvel. They had very scant creative control, though. The first real independent movie they made was Iron Man. That was the standalone Marvel Studios movie, and that was a big success for them. So it was hard to wrap your head around, but Marvel Studios was an indie studio, and they didn't last as long as an indie, that's for sure, because Disney went in there and saw that they were making money.
Exactly. $4 billion. And this deal also, from what I understand, includes the comics?
I would presume so. The comics aren't a moneymaker. The comics are for a core fan base. Of course, they get lots of reprints, whenever a movie comes out, they'll package together a bunch of different comics. I mean, you go to any bookstore, and you can see what they've done with X-Men, with Iron Man, with Spider-Man, in conjunction with those movies. Whenever there's even anything that's remotely science fiction or comic book based, there are tons of spin-offs. When Star Trek came out, there was a spin-off graphic novel that was a prequel. G.I. Joe's got, you know, adaptations. The Transformers had adaptations plus prequels and sequels and everything else that were totally, you know, revolving around the movie. Watchmen, they reprinted ad nauseum and had all kinds of different art books. But, of course, there was no sequel and prequel for those. But, yeah, I mean, tons of merchandise for those different properties, if you want to call them.
Now, I know some of the titles that so Ant-Man and Runaways are probably the first two that they're going to jump on. I heard that they're going to relaunch Fantastic Four. The next Fantastic Four movie they're going to do is going to completely ignore the first two, and they're going to go for something fresh, visceral.
I think that's a good idea.
I don't know if that will be a Disney property or if those rights are promised to
who did it?
Fox? Was that Fox?
I think it might have been Fox, yeah. The Fantastic Four probably deserves better treatment than it got. It was close, but it wasn't quite right. And I don't, you know, I was never a Fantastic Four fan. In fact, I didn't know many kids who were. But apparently it's, you know, the movies have developed a fan base and, you know, and a familiarization with the characters. I tried.
Can only be so wordy.
I failed on that one. So, yeah, I mean, I think that deserves a reboot more than, say, Superman does. I mean, they could have stuck with the way Superman went and just made an action movie for the second film.
And Ghost Rider is better than people think.
Ghost Rider is better than people think. It's kind of cool. It needed a better villain.
Yes.
But, yeah, I thought Ghost Rider, perhaps a little miscast. The effects were wicked. It's that poor director. I can't remember his name now. Mark.
There's a reason
Steven Johnson.
He's a poor
director. Mark Steven Johnson. He made a Daredevil, and they hacked it to pieces, and people called it a bad movie. Because he made a two-hour-plus movie, and they chopped it down to 90 minutes. So if you watch the director's cut of Daredevil, it's infinitely better.
Infinitely?
Than what, yeah, it really
there
is.
There we go.
There's characters and a plot line that were completely omitted from Daredevil.
I didn't mind Daredevil.
It came up before Spider-Man. Was it before Spider-Man or after the first one? It suffered from the same thing that Spider-Man suffered from, where those effects in the first movie were kind of cartoony. They really weren't that good. Do you remember that? The first Spider-Man? The effects, you know, especially the CGI Spider-Man, weren't that great.
Are we talking the movie?
Yeah.
In the first one,
yeah.
With Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of cheesy. And
isn't it amazing how, you know, a mere 7 years later.
We just, yeah, I know, but we kind of just said,
even X-Men.
Good.
Years later.
There was a time where that would just all be done practically with a stuntman and wires, and I'm sure they tried it.
How we've evolved over the last 10 years.
Now you can't even tell the difference.
I know.
Dennis, what do you think of this deal with Marvel and Disney?
You are still with us.
Of course I am. Well, it's kind of like an amalgamation. Everything seems to be centering, and Disney's kind of like the blob that ate Manhattan, you know.
Microsoft of movies.
Yeah, it's just taking over. So you wonder if the centralization of all that power is good. I mean, look at the case with when Pixar was taken over by Disney. It was great for Pixar and great for Disney. And Pixar, you know, is making great movies on its own. It's an independent, but then it got incredibly wide distribution thanks to Disney, and I think the same thing is going to happen with Marvel. It's kind of interesting to read about how they have existing licenses, with Sony and Paramount for other films. So you wonder how long it'll take. Would it be, you know, Spider-Man 10, Spider-Man 15 before finally we get a Walt Disney Marvel production and Sony's out of the picture? How long do these licensing deals last? And also it'll be interesting to see if Marvel has kind of a brain tank, a think tank, that creates new superheroes. You know, if Disney's going to open the wallet a little bit and say, hey, guys, you know, come up with a new Spider-Man or come up with a
new... You know,
new...
they've reinvented Spider-Man so many times. But, you know, it's the thing. And my dad, if he were here, he'd have a whole rant to go on about it, and he'd be like, it's not as good as it used to be, and, you know, I don't care about Spider-Man and Spider-Man's family, that they have something, they did something about that. And, you know, there's the Amazing Spider-Man, the Spectacular Spider-Man, the Uncanny Spider-Man.
But don't forget.
And, you know, and it's just to keep the, it's to introduce a character to a new generation, and it proves successful. How many times is Bruce Wayne going to die? How many times can he kill Superman?
That's true.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne just recently got killed.
I know.
The thing with Marvel Comics, and I'm sure, of course, with DC, there are so many characters. They don't have to make any new ones. They really don't. If you look at the cover of some of these graphic novels that DC has, for example, like Infinite Crisis, there's one, and there's one that's set in the future called Kingdom Come, where it's about this new generation of superheroes who've gone too far. They murder, they kill, they have fights with their superpowered villains at the expense of humankind, destroying cities. You know, there's the pivotal moment is where one character who can create nuclear reactions explodes and destroys Kansas, like destroys the wheat belt, basically. And the old school superheroes have to come in and kind of save the day. Marvel had a comic book series that would come out every month. They had it for over a year called Marvel Universe, where issue one would be A. All the superheroes and villains would begin with the letter A, and then B, and then C, and so on. There are so many characters, most of them crap, but so many characters they can choose from. Where it has to be a good idea is, are they good characters? Do the public know them? Will people care?
There's going to be, you know what they're going to do? They're going to have a lot of direct-to-DVD.
I'm sure that'll be part of
that's
it.
That's probably because
they do that already.
To invest money into, I mean, you're talking about Disney, the guys who ducked out of Prince the Third Narnia because Prince Caspian only did $200 million or something like that. So the way they're thinking is if they're going to invest hundreds of millions into a movie, they might as well do characters that everybody cares about. I mean, we've seen the major ones, and we talked about this last year with Iron Man. You know, we've seen the major characters. Now they're going to kind of the secondary characters.
Iron Man wasn't even that major.
Yeah, exactly. Iron Man, he's always been a secondary character. Same with the Hulk, so on and so forth. So I think what they might do is something like, you know, I don't even know a small character off the top of my head.
What's interesting about all this is to look at the success that Iger has had as the head of Disney, that even Eisner wouldn't dream of, you know, with amassing both Pixar and Marvel. What I like to think about is good old Jeffrey Katzenberg, you know, Mr. Lion King at Disney, and then he quit in a huff in his big fight with Eisner, and he went over to DreamWorks. And now I'm sure, you know, DreamWorks is looking over at Disney going, oh, my God, you know, now you got Marvel for animation. That's quite a lot of competition.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out and whether there's going to be heavy Disney involvement or they're just going to leave Marvel alone, let it do its thing, and just have it reap cash for the studio. It'll be interesting to see how much involvement. I don't think there's going to be lots of cross characterization. You're not going to see Mickey Mouse popping up in any Spider-Man video games anytime soon.
Don't mess with their plan for Avengers.
No, I think that those plans are probably already set. I don't know. But my feeling is that those plans are already set, and that where the real involvement will be with stuff that's in really pre-production, like this Ant-Man thing with Edgar Wright. Although that may already be in some heavy pre-production. It might be a little late to get involved in that one. I think what they're saying is once these deals with Sony and Fox and Paramount, which do have finite, you know, ends. Like, they'll say if you don't make another Spider-Man movie within 3 years, your deal is released. That sort of thing.
What happened with Superman.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. So I think eventually it'll all fall into place. It'll just take some time. You know, they're becoming a big conglomerate like the others, like CBS, Viacom, Paramount, Sony. You know, they all conglomerate together. They're all, you know, gigantic, you know, NBC, Universal, whatever. It was a big story. It was a lot of money. Great for Marvel, which, you know, when I was younger and they were just a comic book company, got passed around like the ugly stepchild. Like, it was just get bought and sold by every little company. It was constantly teetering on bankruptcy. And they started to make some, you know, cartoons, but they were licensed out, and And now that they finally had some success with movies, because they didn't, you know, Superman were successful in the 70s and early 80s. The Batman movies were successful in the late 80s. And Marvel couldn't get their act together. They had those horrible Roger Corman movies that they had of Captain America. If you ever want to see some bad movies, Ned Beatty did a Captain America movie.
I've seen the Captain America and I've seen the Punisher. So brutal.
Yeah, just you have to see it sometime. They're god-awful. You can see clips of them on YouTube. And Fantastic Four.
Dolph Lundgren's Punisher.
Fantastic Four, there's a god-awful Fantastic Four movie that had to be rushed into production.
They had to make it so bad.
So very, very bad.
And I want to just throw out, do you remember their Generation X show that they were trying for
Fox? Sure, yeah, yeah. Absolutely,
Didn't quite work too well.
And last but not least, there were a lot of TV shows. There was the Hulk show, the Spider-Man show. I loved the Spider-Man show. It was horrible. The Hulk TV show was like kind of the launching point for other shows. Because the Hulk show, they had a Thor spinoff show.
They had a
really bad Daredevil show. Yeah, they did.
Ooh, huh.
Yeah, the Daredevil was in a black costume, and the Thor
one,
I don't even know.
So we might see some TV series come out
maybe
on ABC. Because ABC is owned by
Disney. Absolutely. You know what?
Speaking of ABC, they got the best lineup this fall,
I think. Now you're cooking with gas. You might see some TV shows based on Marvel Comics on ABC. Absolutely. There'd be that cross-platform thing going on. All right, so that'll wrap things up here for show 67 of Inside Movies and TV. Check the blog out, moviesandtvcast.blogspot.com. Send us comments, kudos, suggestions, insults, cease and desist orders to moviesandtvcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Scott Johnson and Scott Fletcher for their help. And, of course, to Aaron Shaw for maintaining the blog each and every day. Good job there, Aaron. Thanks for putting together the show
notes
as well.
Sound effects provided by
Big special thanks for Dennis for joining us again this week. Thank you very much, Dennis. And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Thanks for listening. And check us out. We're off for a little bit more than a week, but we'll be back not too long in the near future for another episode of, Toronto International
Fall
Film Festival.
Preview.
Hopefully we're going to get some special exclusive reports from Dennis as he is at Ground Zero at TIFF, as they call it. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Inside Movies and TV.
We're close enough to die.